Mr. Drake, rail 17.
Right, well, as I was saying, Mr. Smart, I don't know whether he carried any rank or not. I suppose he would do, really, because he was in charge of the... in the hold of the ship were these prisoners, some in armproof compartments where they couldn't do any damage to themselves or anything, and some of them were in a pretty bad state. Because eventually he took me down to see them, and there was a particular major, he says, you have to watch, he says, because when I opened the slot, he says, he'll spit at you. And sure enough, when he opened the slot, he spit at him. He says, he's a very bad case, he says, a very bad case. And he showed me around quite a few of the cases, which were pathetic, like, to think they were...
All being caused by their experiences
in an action in war, either shell-shocked or typical case for Captain Kirkup. But it was his job to take charge of them, but I know it was very handy to know, because then every day at 4 o'clock I went to draw the naffy supplies, and how many is on your ward? So many, right. So many cigarettes each, right. Collect them, take them back to the ward, go round. Anybody want cigarettes? No, 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 yes, yes. You know, distribute them, whatever were left. Well, there were always, I got enough for everybody. So there were always a nice few left. And he's funny enough, he got me a couple of kit bags. And I started packing them in into these kit bags. I says, got one kit bag full. He says, I'll get a lock and make sure it's locked up. He knew the ropes all right, so he locked it up and put it away into its stores. He says, fill this other one now, and I used to keep it under the bed until it were full. So we filled two kit bags throughout the journey, and I still quite a lot more, so I filled all my pockets, every pocket I had, and especially my overcoat and my tunic, and when I got dressed to the ship, eventually landed at Avonmouth. And of course, it was lit up all the way. It wasn't in darkness. It was lit up, and there was a big cross on deck, and on both decks, front, fore, and aft. And we eventually landed at Avonmouth. Which is just north of Bristol, and it pulled in at the side of the docks, and my big worry was, am I going to carry all this lot off the boat? So he'd inform me, he said, oh, don't worry about that, I've got all that arranged. So when it come, we got ready and got on side of the docks, and ship had pulled in, and there was an hospital train pulled up side of the ship. There was just a sort of a walkway in between, and all we got to do was go from the ship into the hospital train. And he came down, and one of his pals came down and with me, and we carried they carried a kit bag each, and I carried my overcoat with packed in bottom of my overcoat, and we slung them onto the carriage racks up above, and we were away. The only promise I had to make to him was that I'd see that his father got a couple hundred cigarettes, who lived in the next village of Kingsley, like, which is more or less part of Emsworth. There's just a park in between, and then these few rows of houses, which are called Kingsley, and the gasworks was there. Oh, Off we came. We got off at disembarked at Avonmouth, and then we proceeded in the hospital train, which went straight up to Bishop Auckland. And when we got to Bishop Auckland, there was trucks there to take us into Bishop Auckland Hospital. So we were taken into Bishop Auckland Hospital, and my kit bags were put into the store. And the other things I carried with me, and I said to the fella who was in charge of, so I'll look after them, I says, and I'll see you right. I says, here's a box of cigarettes to go on with. One, he was over the moon, like, because they were all ship's cigarettes. They were all the large ones, you know, ship's woodbines, especially. There was quite a large cigarette, full size, you know, and I got 3 5s and Players, Capstan, and all good brand cigarettes they were. And at one stage, he said, look out for them, he says, but they'll get some tobacco. He'd warned me, he'd warned me about tobacco coming on. He says, when you go, get your share, he says. So I did, it came on all right, and I got my share of tobacco, and it was in big strips. Well, my dad smoked a pipe, so I thought, he says, have you anybody smoke a pipe? I says, yes, my dad does. He says, he'll be pleased about this, and he says, it's good plug tobacco. Well, I had, as I said, I put my kit bags in store, and I was in the hospital for a month. But I was unfortunate when I was there. I had this revolver with the silver Colt in the handle, which had been presented to me, and I'd also a compass and one or two other a watch, army watch, and this sort of thing, which had collected the captain quartermaster was always very generous. For anything I wanted, I could have. So I used to have lost my watch and lost my compass and lost my binoculars. So I had them, and of course I wasn't supposed to have them. I was supposed to have handed them in back, but nobody knew, so I kept them with me, and I was saving those as souvenirs. However, while I was at Bishop Auckland Hospital, somebody rifled me locker, and they disappeared. So I never saw them from that day to this. I was sorry about that, especially the revolver. I wanted to keep that. But somebody wanted it more than I did, so it was confiscated while I was at Bishop Auckland. But I managed to keep my kit bags.
So stop you there, Mr. Drake. A couple of things. First of all, was the quartermaster's attitude to losing things different when you're in the front line to what it was back in England?
Oh, totally different. You say, if you took a pair of socks and they hadn't been darned, they wouldn't change them for you. When you were in England, different man. When you were in England, you took a pair of socks down, and I'll tell you, if they hadn't been darned, get them darned. If there were holes in them, get them darned. But if they'd been darned and worn again, then it'd change them. And same with your shoes, if they're anything like, take them to cobblers. And all this sort of thing. Oh, I only should know when it was absolutely essential when we were in England. But when we got in Africa, it was a different kettle of fish. Well, he was as far as I was concerned, because when after we'd done the decoy job and we got back into the woods, he said, first thing he says, "Your suit's terrible." He said, "Take it off." I said, "I'll give you no suit." And he had me a new suit on in no time. And have you any, yes, I'll have a watch. Yes, I'll have, anything I wanted I could have from that fella. He thought the world of me.
Remember his name?
Eh?
Remember his name?
What was his name? I can't think of his name. I can see his face, but I can't tell you his name. It might come back to me at some stage, but...
So his attitude was...
Totally, completely different. What you had to have, what you wanted, you could... as far as I was concerned, whatever I wanted, he'd give me. I've left my binoculars and all this. I finished up letting my corporal have a pair of binoculars besides me and all this sort of thing. So
who would have binoculars within a platoon?
Normally the sergeant. That's all the sergeants. They'd have binoculars and a compass. They were only the sergeants. Maybe the officers had, but as far as we were concerned, we had a compass and binoculars. And there was a barman's shroud rangefinder issued at one period, and we could get the range of any particular object that we had.
And how many
I didn't use it a lot.
How many of them would there be in a platoon?
Oh, I don't know. They wouldn't be very rare. They're very scarce for them.
You never used them in action?
I never used the Behrman Stroud one.
And the other thing, Mr. Drake, did you mention the quality of these cigarettes that you'd acquired on the ship?
Yeah.
What about the quality of the cigarettes that you received within Africa?
Oh, they were the same, really. Yeah, they were the same cigarettes. They were always good quality. Capstan or Players. Players were very popular, and 3-5s were popular. They were a nice cigarette.
Did you have any complaints on that score?
No complaints on cigarette score.
Because I think other veterans have talked about big cigarettes.
A lot. There were a lot of Camels flying about, which...
That was
an American brand, and Chesterfield, which was another American brand. But our Naffy supplies were more or less in English all the time, our Naffy supplies. So we were more or less... They did one or two places where we got some very cheap ones, but we didn't have to have them. We always seemed to get a fair amount of supply.
Now you were sent to Bishop Auckland. Was that because of the DLI connection, or was it?
I should imagine so. I should imagine because it was North Country Regiment. We were sent up to Bishop Auckland, thinking we'd be. More nearer to his hometowns.
And were most of the people
but,
on the hospital?
For my case, I wasn't, of course.
Were most of the people on the hospital ship from the North Country?
Yes, they were mostly from the North. Most of them who came up on the hospital ship were from the North part, Newcastle area and places like that. But what they did there, they let some on leave, and some that didn't. I was one that didn't come home on leave, although we were all due for what they call disembarkation leave. But I never got any from there, and I was there about a month. It took a month for them to go through the old routine of examining you from... bear and meal tests and all things like that, which were for your stomach, and they found out I had ulcers as well as had a duodenal ulcer and a peptic ulcer and gastric ulcer. Of course, all this was due to a poor sort of part of the healing process, but fortunately they did burst, but when they burst, I could always part with it. It didn't burst like on the outside of the stomach. It always burst on the inside, and of course it floated through to back passage.
And what did you think of the way you were being treated all through the stages?
Fairly well. We were all well looked after, I should say, through the hospital periods. I stayed a month at Bishop Auckland, and then the only trouble was that it seemed every place we went to were to go through the same thing again. And I thought they should have the records of which should be passed on, and they wouldn't have to do the same. But when I got down to, I was sent from Bishop Auckland to Pinderfields, that's Wakefield, well, that was in my vicinity. I went one Friday night, and I got the post into Pinderfields in Wakefield. So Friday night, well, there was no way I was going to Pinderfields at Friday night. I went straight on to Emsworth and spent the weekend at home. And brought my kit bags home, and of course left them there. And then I went back to, I was reported to Pinderfields at 9 o'clock on the Monday morning. So at least I'd been home, and they saw I were okay, although I'd lost a lot of weight. They found out I was okay and everything, and they knew what was going on. So I said, I'll be at least there a month. It takes them a month to do everything, all the tests. And sure enough, I went and reported on Monday morning, and they always used to say, right, take your clothes off, get into your pyjamas and get into bed. I says, you what? She said, the nurse comes here, so get undressed, take a bath and get into your pyjamas and get into bed. I says, when? She says, now. I said, oh, no chance. She says, why not? I says, look, I says, we landed in Avonmouth, back in this country. I says, I've been up to Bishop Auckland. A load has had leave. I says, I haven't. I'm close to home. And I says, I'm due to some disembarkation leave. I says, until I get to know that, and I want to go down to the office of the whoever's in charge here and see about it, I says, and see what can be done. If nothing can be done, then I'll be back, I'll take a bath, I'll be in bed, and I'll be a good customer. Oh, fair enough. Doctor came round, and I told him the same thing. So when he'd been, I went down to the office, and I think it was a major in the office, and I'd explained to him what had happened, and some had been on leave, and I was an unfortunate one that hadn't, like. Oh, he says, well, we'll soon put that right, he says. Will a fortnight at home be all right? I said, oh, well, that'll be nicely. That'll do nicely. I says, this is, how much money do you want? I says, oh, so much. Because I was all right for money. So, I don't think I'd drawn any wages while I were abroad, because I'd won that much on boats. I'd never wanted it anyway. I'd no way to spend it. So, on the whole, I just drew a bit of money to show that I was still on the books, sort of thing. And off I went home for a fortnight. So we had a fortnight at home. I fed mostly on milk. I got a dispensation to get 2 bottles of milk every day. And that I had to drink, of course. Sometimes you just warm it rather than have it cold. I had to be very careful. So I managed very nicely and saw my friends. I went down to Kingsley and took Smart's father the cigarettes as promised, and he was overjoyed with 2 or 3 boxes of cigarettes. And I was very generous all the way around, where people were coming to see me and all this, that and other. I thought, I'll never get rid of them all, like I'd got that many. They didn't last all that long, though. Although they seemed to be lasting a long time, we're still going through them. Anyway, I went back to hospital, no bother. Sitting to have a bath, sitting to bed, and then I was there at their disposal. So they went through the old system again, bear a meal, tube down into your stomach, testing, pulling the tube outside of your face, and every 2 hours draw some off, and every hour.
Right, so we're still talking about your treatment at Bishop Auburn now.
Yes, well, this is back at Pinderfields.
Yeah,
we're back at Pinderfields, and we've reported back for duty, as you might say, and we're to go through the whole process again of bare meal and half hour. With a syringe which drew off the fluid off his stomach and put into test tubes. We go through all that process again, and once they'd done the assessing and looked at the previous ones before, and I was still kept strictly on a very rational diet. I hadn't to eat meat. I could only eat what they call white meat, a little bit of chicken and things like that, but no red meat at all. And I was gradually feeling better of myself, and I weren't in a lot of pain. The only time if I had too much, then I knew I'd had too much, and I used to get the pains, and I would probably not eat it. It stopped me from eating altogether, and you used to have to wait then until the pain had gone before I started with the drinks again and things like that. But I was there approximately a month, and then you go in front of the senior medical officer, and he's an army personnel. I think he was a colonel, a lieutenant colonel, and I went in front of him, and he looked at me, and I was dressed and everything, and went in front of him for an interview, and his interview was, I can see you're an army man. The bit of ribbon didn't have carry weight when it come to any interviews and things like that. So he says, you're a bit like myself. He says, you can't go abroad again. He says, but there are circumstances where you can do a good job for us, and you can stay in, and in the meantime, if I can get you a post into an hospital, he says, they'll be able to look after you, and you of course will benefit by that, and also you'll be doing a good job, like you'll be releasing an A1 man to go more or less into the forces generally. So I've studied this, and I said, well, he says, otherwise, he says, I've either to downgrade you from A1, he says, or I have to discharge you from the army. So he says, what's your opinion? So I said, well, I don't know really. I says, I understand what you say, like, you I could be better looked after. I could get things at an hospital where I can't get them in civilian life. And the proper diet, and which I probably won't be able to stick to in civilian life. But I says, I'd like to go home at weekend and just discuss it with my wife and see and come to an opinion. So that's what I did. I went and discussed it with my wife and see what she had to say and see if she minded if I still stayed in or whether I came out. And I'd explained to her what the officer told me at Pinderfield. So we decided it would be probably better for myself if I did stay in. So I went back and I gave him the opinion we'd arrived at, and he says, well, he says, I'm grading you down to C2HS, which is, he says, it's the lowest category you can stay in the army, and the HS on the end of it means that you're home service, you can't go abroad. He says, that's what the HS stands for. So I'll downgrade you to C2, he says, and he says, at least if it's within the powers that be, he says, you'll probably get an hospital job. But he says, see how you go on. So I was posted to Northern Command Infantry Depot, and when I got down there, it was a typical place where all odds and sods arrived until they got proper posting orders. And I was there a few weeks, and the RSM was a real old RSM type, and he was very, very strict. Everybody had to be out on parade every morning. I was the only man that was excused all parades and excused all duties. So I was in a position where he couldn't tell me what I could do or what I couldn't do. And I was lost what to do. I weren't allowed to do any duties, and I weren't allowed to do this and that, to have special food when I went into the dining room. So I was wandering about the camp all the time, and he used to get annoyed because he couldn't, who are you, what are you doing, why aren't you doing this, and why aren't you on parade? And I had to explain to him that I was excused all duties, and that I was on special diet, and so there was nothing much he could do. So eventually he said, well, can't you do anything? I says, well, I'll look after the mess room for you if you want. He says, I'll run that. So I said, oh, he says, oh, well, that'll do, he says. As long as you, I said, I'll be pleased to do it. I says, as long as I have somebody there to do all the hard work like. And I says, right, so I took charge of the mess. And I was there just looking after the mess. I could go out when I wanted, I could come back in when I wanted. And I went to see my brother, who lived in Nottingham, one weekend, and came back, and I was sort of a freelance. But I did look after the mess and see that it was cleaned up every day, and all, everything washed up, cleaned up, scrubbed and what have you, until I got my orders out to go to Aberystwyth, and supposed to do a week in the commander's office, a week in the office of different establishments. The quartermaster's office, where they distributed all the goods and everything, a week in the pay office, and actually I didn't stay there as long as what I was supposed to do, because I was passed out in every office I went. So the colonel had explained all this to me before, when I arrived there.